This is Wellness 101, brought to you by the Institute of Natural Health, your home for common sense, science-based healthcare. Here's your host, Dr. TJ Williams.
Hey, welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Dr. TJ, and with me as always is Aaron.
Just look at me. I don't know. Hi.
It's become a theme here. This is Wellness 101. If you're a new to the show, I highly encourage you to go back and listen to last week's episode. We post these things on SoundCloud and on iTunes. We joke sometimes about on this show that Erin, even though she's here, she doesn't sometimes say the most. But last week, she basically talked the entire show because we were talking about fibromyalgia. And we learned that fibromyalgia is a hot topic or a hot button topic for Erin. She has lots to say.
We learned a lot of other things, too. That's not the only point of last week's show.
Yes. But if you were wanting to hear Aaron kind of get a little upset and get a little heated, last week's show is definitely on the to-do list.
Apparently it's a hot topic for a lot of people because we've gotten so many people who have said, can you please do a show on this? So
that's true.
These are my people. Hopefully I am not the only one that gets a little frustrated with fibromyalgia.
This is true. So this week we're going to pick up kind of where we left off. I'm going to do a quick recap. So about fibromyalgia, last week we talked a little bit about what it is. It's just, body pain. That's the watered down version. We talked about common symptoms of fibromyalgia, and those are things like fatigue and headaches, memory issues, sleep disorders, abdominal cramping, depression, anxiety, and fibro fog, which is this like brain fog type thing because of the pain that's associated with fibromyalgia. We talked about, numbness and tingling in extremities, and even things like irritable bowel syndrome can all be, tied into fibromyalgia. Then we started talking about top 10 mistakes that most practitioners when they're treating or diagnosing fibromyalgia make. And the first one we talked about was that autoimmunity is overlooked or mistreated. We talked about how, most doctors don't even put into the same category that fibromyalgia might be a symptom of an autoimmune condition, or there might be, a contributing factor to that.
And we talked before about the fact that, part of that is because doctors don't feel like they have enough information to diagnose or treat autoimmunity, so they just overlook it altogether.
Yeah.
Or if they do, somehow it comes up and they're able to diagnose it, they have no clue how to treat it.
Correct.
Usually.
Correct. And mistake number two, we got through two, I believe, is that it's all in your head.
Which I went off on this one because I know that this is something that's frustrating to anybody who has a fibromyalgia diagnosis, that it's not in your head. It is a real thing. And it's, I think, as difficult as fibromyalgia is to deal with, it makes it a million times harder when people around you, especially your doctor, is acting like it's not a real condition. Like you're making it up.
She's heated. You should see her eyes. She's got angry eyes right now.
Do I?
It's angry. Basically, fibromyalgia, it's not in your head. It is a metabolic condition. And then we also, a big takeaway with that was, you can't medicate your way out of a metabolic condition. That's just not how the human body works. Right. We're not wired that way.
It is unfortunately how a lot of medical doctors try to treat metabolic conditions.
It's true.
It never works, and that's why people always end up in our office.
And they until they do, they continue to get sicker, most of them. Okay, so moving right along. Mistake number three. Look out, ladies and gentlemen, we're moving right along. Incomplete tests are ordered.
Yeah, we kind of hit on this a little bit before.
We did. We touched a little bit. This is so true. I have patients come to me and they're like, well, I had all this lab work ran. I'm like, make sure you bring that with you on your very first visit. That's our staff is, they're all trained. Bring your lab work with you. What you've had done. I've had people bring me stacks, 2-3 inches tall of papers, just stacked all up. And when we go through, they're like, I've had all of this lab work.
And first of all, I just want to say, a lot of times when it's brought up that you need to bring it, so many patients have never seen any of it.
Yeah.
They're like, well, I just know that it's normal. Well, okay.
Yeah. Why don't you print that out and bring it to us?
Right. And they have to actually go through the steps of getting it because they have never seen any of the lab work.
Right. But the ones that do, they bring it in, and then I'm like, okay, so I start to look at a few things, and you know, they're like, well, look at all this lab work that was ran. I'm like, yep, you have a 2-inch tall stack here of the exact same 3 tests ran over and over and over again, and none of them are telling you anything. And they look at me like I have 3 heads. It happens more frequently than I care to discuss. It's just one of the biggest things that I'm just like, I don't understand, you know, why this happens in medicine. It just baffles me. The tests are ridiculously incomplete. I mean, sometimes they come with a little bit more than what I'm seeing as average or quote typical, but most of the time not. And if they do, they're looking at, you know, some sort of crazy, ridiculous, off the wall parasite or bug, and I'm like, what in the world are they looking for here? I mean, sometimes I can kind of gather where their, you know, where their train of thought was, but it's oftentimes I'm just like, what in the world is going on here? It's pitiful. But anyway, so most of the time they're not looking at anything that, you know, gets really at true immune function. We like to dive deep into this stuff and really figure out, okay, what's going on with your immune system? What's happening? You know, we look at the entire thyroid panel. They're like 10 pieces to this thyroid panel, and most of the time people show up with 2 of the 10, and oftentimes it's the 2 that mean the least. I don't know why a thyroid panel is the way it is, because it doesn't really tell you anything unless you get all the pieces of the puzzle.
Right. And we're going to talk a little bit, I think, after we go through the 10 mistakes about some of the things that we, you know, that are most common that we see that are causing the fibromyalgia symptoms. And so that'll be, you know, clear about, okay, these are the, you know, I mean, so we will kind of go through, hey, these are the things that we make sure that we test for, because we do generally see, you know, the same problems, the same causes for these. I mean, there are a number of potential causes, but generally it boils down to one of those potential causes.
Right, exactly. So another one is adrenal stress. We look at things there too. If you missed our segment on adrenal fatigue, we did a...
You probably didn't miss it because it was so, 4
yeah,
parts.
Yeah, if you tuned in over the course of a month, you heard that one because it was a 4-parter. But we do that here, and it was very informative.
Yeah. Well, we find a topic, and then between the two of us, we're like, we have to tell them this information. We have to tell them this information.
Right.
And so it just kind of grows.
That's right. So, all right. So that's one of the big things is incomplete testing. I mean, we have to have enough information to make a clinical judgment on what's going on in your system. We can't just, you know, look at the surface and say, oh, well, maybe it's this, maybe it's that. No, that doesn't work. I mean, I've done this for years. I've gained tons of experience at it. We're always better off figuring out what's truly going on and run the tests that are necessary.
Right. And I would say the biggest issue, like you said, is that they're not ordering these more advanced tests. They're not actually looking farther. Although I will say we do get, you know, some people who come from alternative, you know, practitioners, and they've only ordered these off-the-wall tests, and they haven't ordered the basics. Because like
right.
you said, I mean, the basics are important. We need to know those values because, I mean, there are times when those things are off.
Right.
And so it's kind of baffling how it seems like it's one or the other. Either they've only ordered the basics and then they're normal, so they're like, oh, you must be totally fine. I mean, we're just going to kind of ignore the massive pain that you experience every day. Or we have people who are ordering these tests that we're like, that's, you know, such a tiny percentage of the population. I mean, like, why would you test that and not test
right.
these other things that are known to cause fibromyalgia symptoms?
Right. And it's funny. I teach a lot of other doctors how to do this type of practice. I'm one of the instructors for doctors who are trying to be functional medicine practitioners or wanting to become functional medicine practitioners. And while, it, you know, on one hand, I find myself wanting to order less and less tests because you start to see these patterns, but there's so much more information that the problems become more and more complex. And so because the problems are more complex, the testing has to be more complex. You can't just, you know, you can't expect an extremely complex multi-organ problem to be accurately tested in one or two tests. It just doesn't work that way. And if you're going somewhere and that's what they're doing, find somebody better.
Right. Well, and a lot of that too, you need to do that because you need to be able to prioritize.
Right.
I mean, because it's not, you know, if you only test one thing, well, then you may find that that's the problem, but that might not be the biggest problem or the most pressing problem or the underlying cause of the other problems. I mean, you have to get an overall picture so you can say, okay, this is what we're dealing with. This is where we need to start. And then we'll keep track on the way, because if, you know, if we clear this up, some of these other things may be able to, you know, they may clear up as well.
Right. So we've got to take a break. The next mistake that we're going to talk about is going to tie directly into incomplete test ordering. And that's talking about ordering the right tests, but reading them incorrectly. This happens all the time. And when we come back, we are going to dive into that mistake as well.
That is kind of a hot button issue for
Very hot button issue for me. So get ready. I'm getting my podium and my pedestal ready, because I'm going to get up on my high horse here and talk about this one. So when we come back, we're going to talk about ordering the right tests and reading the results incorrectly. You're listening to Wellness 101.
Is Wellness 101.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. If you're just tuning in, we're talking about fibromyalgia today. It's part two. I would say of two, but I'm not sure. It might be part two of three. We never.
I had to speed this up a little bit.
Yeah, we're going to have to go a lot faster than we are if this is going to be done in two. So before we left, we were talking about mistakes that are made. And we talked about mistake number three being incomplete tests ordered. And then I said that mistake four that we're going to talk about now ties in with incomplete tests. And this is when the right tests are ordered, but they're interpreted incorrectly, or they're read wrong. So this is one that really frustrates me. So most medical doctors out there, and most everybody, if you've looked at your lab work, you know, if you're outside of the range, there's a big red H or a big blue H or a bolded H that says that you're high, or an L that says that you're low. And so, but if there's not, the doctors will look at you and be like, oh, no, you're perfectly healthy. You're normal. So we have tons of people that come in with all this lab work and nothing is out of medical range, but their doctors tell them, oh, no, you're perfectly healthy. But they have massive symptomatology, huge problems. And when we really get down to it and really look at their lab work, all the results are at the very ends of the spectrum. So if you got something that runs from 1 to 10, they're setting at 9.9 on everything. Well, there's no possible way that they're healthy, but that's just not how medicine works. If you're inside the reference range, you're perfectly fine. Well, the reference range for most labs is a statistical analysis of the last 10,000 that the lab that's running it has ran, and they basically do the mean, the average, and then they figure out what the standard deviations are, and they go 2+ and 2-, and that actually statistically encompasses 95% of the population. Well, the last time I went outside and looked, and all I do is just use some common sense here, when I went outside and looked around, 95% of our country is not healthy. So the way that we determine labs, and it's just pitiful. And then they really freaks people out when they have labs ran at a hospital and they compare those labs to labs that are ran through, I don't know, Quest or LabCorp or something like that. And they're like, well, I don't understand. The ranges are completely different. I'm like, yes, they are, because it's a statistical analysis of the labs. The people in the hospital are typically way sicker than the people that are outside the hospital. So the ones that are in the hospital, those ranges for the hospital are going to be different than the ranges out there in the normal, average, everyday public. But still, So we have some labs that are determined that way. And then we have others like cholesterol that they just pick an arbitrary number of, say, of 200. And, well, that's high. So anything above 200 is a problem. But in the 60s and 70s, it was 300. In the mid-90s, it dropped to 240. And now it's 200. And we've got all tons of research that's saying that, you know, cholesterol isn't the driving factor of cardiovascular disease, but everybody still wants to hop on that bandwagon. So I just realized I needed to take a breath. I went on a little bit of a rant there. But yeah, so it just, it's very frustrating. So, I mean, you know, like TSH, for instance, this is one, it's thyroid stimulating hormone. We've talked about it on here before. Medical range, the standard medical range out there is between 0.5 and 4.5. And I've actually had patients bring me their lab work. I've physically seen their doctor cross out the range, draw on that paperwork a new range, and then sign their name beside it, and then circle it and write hypothyroidism out to the side because they arbitrarily changed the range in their office. I mean, if that's what we're doing now, we're just arbitrarily changing ranges. I don't really understand that whole thing. But either way, a TSH range of 0.5 to 4.5 is way too broad. There's a much, much narrower range that needs to be, that a thyroid needs to be in.
To be optimal.
To be optimally functioning, to be what a healthy individual looks like. And so that's a big deal. So, you know, that's just one of the reasons where, you know, or one of the things where doctors are looking at a test and saying, oh, no, you're perfectly fine. Your TSH is at 4.4. You're perfectly healthy.
Right. But, which is exactly, I know I've talked about this before, but that's exactly what happened with me on thyroid tests, is that my TSH was high, but my
T3 total was in the tank.
Right. And so I was a disaster waiting to happen. But because medically I was within the ranges, they're like, nope, you're fine. Which, I mean, if they understood the tests, I was totally not fine. There was something going on. It just, so that can be, I mean, and really what we're after here is finding the problems as quickly as possible.
Right.
And so if you're driving really quickly towards a problem, let's slow you down and turn you in the other direction instead of just saying, well, we got to wait till you crash. I mean,
it's like it's all black and white in conventional medicine. Is you're either perfectly healthy or you're dead. And I mean, it just makes no sense to me. There is a gray area. There is this area where you're not optimal. And if we catch you in that not optimal range, it's way easier to turn you around and fix that. Right?
Right.
It's just so much simpler.
Right. And I also want to throw out there, I know that, you know, we're talking kind of about medical doctors and, you know, conventional medicine, but we also see, and I know you get really frustrated, we've talked about this before, with other practitioners who are outside of conventional medicine running tests, running these tests and running more advanced tests, but right. reading the results wrong. And that, right. I think, that gets really frustrating to, I mean, I hear that all the time from TJ because he's like, I mean, it's hard because a lot of those tests are ran out of, you know, they're paid for out of pocket. So you're paying more for the tests and then they're not getting, you know, I mean, the doctors are capable of ordering the tests, but aren't capable of reading them correctly and actually figuring out what the tests mean when you look at them together.
Right.
And that gets so frustrating. I know because it, and plus, I mean, it's, makes it more difficult when, you know, people are that much more skeptical when they come to us because they're like, well, I've already tried, you know, a functional medicine practitioner or someone who claims to be a functional medicine practitioner and they didn't fix me. And we're like, okay, well, this, you know, some of the tests they ran were correct, but what they told you the test said is right. not really actually what's going on. Right. So,
yeah, I get, it's a little frustrating. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that, you know, everyone is different, so it mean you have to be able to see what's going on with the person
and see the whole picture.
Yes,
I mean, and that's one of the things I can tell you. I mean, in the evenings, I can't tell you how many evenings TJ spends on the phone with, you know, I mean, he teaches doctors who want to practice functional medicine, and one of the things that he always says is, I mean, when you start this out, call me when you're starting to interpret this, because it is, I mean, it's a process. And I mean,
I did it when I started.
Exactly.
I called people.
because you don't want to make a mistake on that. And it's amazing how many of the doctors don't, but the ones that do are the ones that go on to be extremely successful because, I mean, and I think anyone knows that from just, you know, your general experience. I can say that from going from school into, you know, like what I learned in law school to being a practicing attorney. Like, you're not 100% prepared.
I have multiple copies of the same textbook because I have some at the office and some at the house.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just, it's one.
It's true.
It's one thing to learn things on in a book and on paper, but like there is something to be said for, you know, having treated thousands of patients. It just, you know, you learn what, you know, what to look for. And also it just, you know, there's going to be a learning curve once you get out of and actually start trying to do it on your own.
Right.
So I think, you know, I know that's another, I just wanted to throw that out there. Even if you go outside of conventional medicine, make sure you're going to a doctor who has, first of all, been trained in functional medicine, because a lot of them are claiming to do this. Oh, we'll find the cause, but they don't have the training. So what are their actual degrees? Because we see that a lot. People claiming to know a lot more than they are, than, you know more than they do. And then also how long have you been doing this? How many patients are you actually seeing? Because that does make a difference also. So maybe that was a topic for me too. Well, I have a bunch of them today.
Karen's super talkative. she more than usual.
Way more than usual. Huh.
It's not a bad thing. She's over there like, okay, I'll stop. It's not a bad thing. It's just.
Yeah. Well, I say I'll stop, but I said I would stop last week.
I like your passion and I like your energy about it.
Yeah. When we talk about things that she's had to go through, it makes a big difference.
Well, I've been there and I know how frustrating it is.
And she also knows how frustrating it is when I sit and read all night long. It's like a big nerd. I'm going home to read the book after this. I'm so excited.
Oh, I know. He is, actually. He's been so excited about this. The new cancer book he got? Yeah, I can't even tell you.
It's a cancer textbook. I'm so excited. It's got all kinds of things in it. It's so exciting. It's so exciting.
You're such a nerd.
I am a complete nerd.
That's something you want in your doctor, though. It's a complete nerd who will go home and read a textbook.
Right.
That's true. That's true.
Exactly.
I'm going to be diving into all of the like different kinds of chemotherapeutics, how they work, and like interactions that go along with them, and really getting into the physiology of why that takes place.
Right.
So it matters.
Yeah. And I know that's kind of a diversion, but for those of you who don't know, I mean, we have a huge number of cancer patients in our clinic. So he is constantly also learning about.
We have patients that have cancer and we treat people that have cancer. We are not afraid to help people that have cancer and are going through
because
it.
Because they can be helped.
They need nutrition.
Right.
Period. Cut and dried.
So back to fibromyalgia.
Back to fibromyalgia. So we've hammered on right test, wrong reading of results enough. Number five is this over medication. The answer to fibromyalgia in conventional medicine is just, oh, here, take this med, take this med, take this med. Oh, it didn't work. Oh, take this one. Oh, this doesn't work. Take this one. I mean,
we've got people on Lyrica.
We've got people on gabapentin. We've got people on, you know, they're moving them through the pain meds.
Right. It's
why?
Actually, with all chronic conditions.
Right.
I mean,
that's true.
I mean, really, we could, you know, spread this out to say it's not fibromyalgia. I mean, that's conventional medicine's answer to, I mean, and we know with chronic illness that does not work.
Right.
It just doesn't.
If it did, diabetes would be getting better, not worse.
Right.
And diabetes is growing in this country.
Yeah. I mean, so many chronic conditions. All chronic conditions are, I mean, most of them are skyrocketing at this point.
And they're metabolic in nature. And like we've said before, we said it last week, we've said it earlier this week, you cannot medicate your way out of a metabolic condition.
Yes.
We've got to fix your metabolism and your body, fix the things that your body does not have enough of, and then allow it to heal itself.
Right. And well, and I think I want to make this distinction here. It's not that medications won't make a difference in how you're feeling, because short term, the medications will, I mean, they're stopping the symptoms. I mean, if you're lucky, I mean, that's best case scenario is that they're stopping the symptoms. They're at least lessening them. I mean, that's the purpose of the medication. purpose of the medication is not to fix you.
Right.
It's not. And if it's a chronic condition like fibromyalgia, there is not an end to you taking that medication if you keep seeing a conventional medical doctor.
And if you listen to the commercials for the medications on TV, they even say, this medication is to treat the symptoms of blah, 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 blah. Whatever it is.
Right.
They're not treating the conditions, treating the symptoms of.
And even if they make you feel better temporarily, they're eventually going to make you way worse because your liver and kidneys have to process all of that.
Right. They're going to create the problem that they're designed to help.
Right.
That's, most medications, in the end, that's what happens.
Right.
So, all right. So that was basically mistake number five.
Yes.
We've got to take another break. When we come back, we're going to move on to number six, which involves diet. Another hot button topic for the both of us. You're listening to Wellness 101.
I got my mind set on you, but it's gonna take money, a whole lot of spending money.
This is Wellness 101.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Today we're talking about fibromyalgia, part two of a, well, I don't know, multiple part series.
Of a series.
Yeah, it's of a series. So before the break, we were talking about mistakes that practitioners often make. And the last one we just talked about was medication is always seems to be the answer for these chronic conditions, especially fibromyalgia. And it's not really, it's... not the answer.
Definitely not the answer.
It's not the answer.
No.
It may be a little crutch for a short period of time, but if you're not going to figure out what's really causing it and fix what's really causing it, long term, it's going to be really, really bad.
Right. Yeah. Just recognize it for what it is. I mean, you know, and there are some people who are like, you know, I'm not ready to see a functional medicine practitioner or whatever it is. I mean, but as long as you recognize it, okay, this is a crutch. You're going to do it for a short period of time because a long period of time, it is not going to be, and it's going to keep making you worse overall. It will temporarily relieve the symptoms. At best, it will do that, and hopefully it will at least lessen them, but it is not fixing the problem.
I couldn't have said it better myself. Number six, moving right along, diet. So oftentimes in conventional medicine, no one really ever talks about diet and the dietary changes that need to take place.
Unlike us that talk about diet at like every single show.
It's true. We do talk about diet.
It's a huge issue.
Right. You know, it's no different here. I mean, most conventional doctors have zero at best knowledge about nutrition. They just don't know. I mean, I have patients. I'm like, well, what did your other doctor tell you? And they'll say, oh, they told me to eat healthy. I'm like, yeah, but what did that mean? Oh, I don't know. They didn't elaborate.
Those of them who have gotten any sort of direction is generally wrong. So I'm not sure we actually, you know.
Eat carbs and fruit. That's what they tell them.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my God.
Exactly. Lay off like the eggs or
don't eat fast food.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't eat fast food.
Which is a decent start. I mean, to... you know,
sure.
Lower the amount of fast food, but that's not a good nutritional plan overall.
When you're eating at home and you're eating out of a bag that has the same ingredients as the fast food, it's the same thing, just taking you longer to cook it.
Right. Exactly.
Yes. Liz is full of good points today.
I try every once in a while.
It's so true. I mean, that's a thing. A lot of people are eating, you know, packaged stuff, even going through the quote health food aisle. And we've joked about on here that, you know, the fact that there is a health food aisle in the grocery store makes me wonder what everything else is. But even if you're eating stuff out of the quote health food aisle that's packaged, that's not always the best thing to do either. I mean, they can have a lot of stuff in there.
Oh yeah, no,
we
laugh at some of the stuff that we see, especially, I mean, because I have everything I eat is gluten free. I mean, I have celiac, I can't have gluten, but I mean, some of the most unhealthy food is gluten-free. And I'm like, oh gosh, you know.
It's gluten-free. They didn't say sugar-free.
Right. I mean, and the stuff that's in it, I'm just like, oh, you know, and we all the time, people will come in and say, well, you know, should I not be eating gluten? And I mean, well, generally, no. I mean, gluten is not good for anybody. But right. at the same time, like, if you're moving from, like, you know, bad food that has gluten in it to bad food that doesn't have gluten in it, you're not making a huge change.
Right. That's right. So a lot of docs have very little education in when it comes to nutrition. They don't understand it. They don't care. They're not going to take the time to learn, because this is not something that you just like read an article and now you're a wizard in nutrition. I mean, it's there again, nerd alert. I read a ton. Right. I mean, all I'm doing is reading. Okay, why does this matter? What goes on here? Why this? I mean, it's extremely important to what's going on right. in the body. I mean, you ask a doctor, your typical doctor, about having a problem with gluten or gluten intolerance, and they're like, oh, yeah, I can test for that. And they run a celiac panel. Now, first off, the celiac panel is pitiful at best.
It's extremely inaccurate to figuring out if you have a problem with gluten.
Yeah.
A very high false negative rate.
But that's not even what a person is typically even referring to. But that's what most doctors jump right to. Oh, well, you don't have celiac disease, so you can eat whatever the heck you want. Well, that's not true.
No.
I mean, it doesn't make any... So if your test comes back negative, which a lot of times it does, they just are like, oh, well, you can eat whatever you want.
Well, and I think what makes, I mean, I know both of us really upset is when, you know, with the celiac issue is that we have people who will come in and say... well, my doctor said if I don't have celiac, like all of this other gluten, you know, people saying, oh, well, you can still have a gluten sensitivity is all just, you know, these practitioners trying to make money and like it's not a real thing. And, you know, it's either you have celiac or you are totally fine eating gluten. And
I really wish I was able to make money on this whole gluten-free thing, because I would not be doing this radio show, ladies and gentlemen.
Right.
This
right.
is not what I
we
would
have
be
no
doing.
No benefit of trying to tell people not to eat gluten. I mean, it makes, yeah, no sense, but it also just shows us, wow, that doctor doesn't know what they're talking about.
No.
I mean, and that's what, you know, and I know we've talked about this before. There's such a vast, you know, difference between the knowledge of, you know, I mean, we have medical doctors who refer to people to us all the time. We have a lot of medical doctors who are excellent patients of the clinic.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we are not like against medical doctors. We work with them all the time, but we are against those who act like they know a lot more than they do on topics that they don't know anything about.
Right.
I mean,
I don't pretend to know anything about podiatry.
Right. You don't perform surgery.
No, I sure don't. I sure don't.
Will you ever. Nor will anyone ask you to.
I don't. And I have nothing to do with dentistry.
That's true.
I wouldn't know where to begin.
For any of those things, we have good people we can refer you out to, but we're not going to be able to tell you.
That is true. I know nothing about it.
Right.
So the big thing with fibromyalgia, I feel like we've kind of gone off topic a little bit. Or if you're new to the show, you understand how this all ties together. If you're not new to the show,
starting to understand how these become three-part shows.
Yes, you are. Yes, that is very true. So with fibromyalgia, a lot of what the symptoms are caused by diet. Things that you're eating that you shouldn't be eating in the first place. I mean, there are so many things that we as humans in this country consume so much of that we shouldn't be consuming at all, or definitely not in the amounts that we're consuming.
Right.
I mean, I read it somewhere, I forget exactly. In like 1900, the average person in America consumed like 5 pounds of sugar in a year. Now we consume 150 pounds of sugar in a year.
Yeah. But compared to all of the chemicals and other things that are in most of our foods,
it's true.
Sugar isn't, you know, I mean, the worst thing, because there are so many things that are just completely inedible. They should not ever be taken into your body. And they are constantly and it's frustrating to us because, you know, it's not done on purpose. Most people don't even know that it's in their food.
Right.
And to act like that isn't causing problems, if you just had it in, you know, one thing you ate during the week, it would be a big issue. But most people are getting all of these chemicals in every single meal.
Right.
So it's huge.
Right. Yeah. People really kind of freak out a little bit when they realize that they can't have gluten. And then it dawns on them that they consume that every meal of every day. And then they're like, I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
Like, well, it's not that difficult here, you know, and we set them down with our nutritionist and we say, look, you know, talk to her. She's going to help you a little bit. We'll help you a little bit, but it's not as big a deal. And then what's funny is they come back in a couple weeks later and they're like, yeah, so it's really not a big deal. I didn't realize that, you know, that there was so much good food out there.
Right.
Because it forced them to get outside of their comfort zone.
Yeah. And I think I've said this before. And one, I'm not sure we even mentioned. I mean, this doesn't just, you know, we're not just talking about gluten. I know we've talked about dairy before. But also, you know, I know I've talked before about the fact that I, you know, I have a number of food sensitivities. And one of my big symptoms when I eat foods that I am not supposed to is pain. Just widespread, you know, pain overall, muscle pain, joint pain. And so it's not just the big culprits, you know, gluten, dairy, sugar. It could be, you know, broccoli or lettuce,
right?
You know,
and
correct me if I'm wrong. You said that if your nose runs when you eat something, it means it's a food sensitivity.
Yeah. Most likely.
So that's just, you know, if you don't have the pain,
right?
You get a runny nose when you eat it, maybe. And it's not like super spicy.
Right. Exactly. And that's just what I was going to say. You'll see a little more runny nose like in soup season. Now, granted, someone could have a sensitivity to that, but when you have your face over a bowl of soup and you're breathing in that steam, so that can cause people's nose to run just a little bit more. I know it's maybe a little gross, but that can happen. But yeah, if you're eating food and your nose runs, you've likely got a food sensitivity to something that's in there.
Like if you drink a glass of milk and your nose is running.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
There's a hint.
Yeah, exactly. There's a hint.
I think the bad.
There's no steam coming from it.
Right, exactly. There's no reason that should be happening.
That's true.
I think one of the hard things with pain is that, you know, for me anyway, it happened, you know, a day or two later. So it's so hard to connect it back because it.
And then if people do try to connect it, they're connecting it to the wrong things. I mean, with fibromyalgia, I can tell you if someone's coming in, they have all this diffuse pain, gut dysfunction is going to be a big piece of this puzzle.
Right.
Their gut is out of balance. It's not happy. It's not functioning well. We're dealing with inflammation. We've got too much, you know, bad bacteria, not enough good bacteria. I mean, this is, and the thing about this is in our gut. This is where we make all of our neurotransmitters. We have 300-500 times more neurotransmitters in our gut than we do in our brain. So if our gut's dysfunctional, we have bad thinking. You know, this whole gut brain axis is real, and things that are going on in your gut are going on in your brain, and vice versa. And so this is extremely important for people that have fibromyalgia. One of the things is to get their gut healed and functioning again.
Right.
And this is not a short fix. This isn't in a couple of weeks it's going to be better. It doesn't work like that. I've had people that have tried to do these cleanses that are, you know, that somebody's out there touting, or they've tried to do this gut healing thing, and they come in, they're like, do you think that's possibly the tipping point that made me so much worse because I am a mess now?
Right.
And
seen a nutritionist, and maybe they've even figured out food sensitivities, but they haven't gone to someone who's trained in actually getting their gut to function. Yeah. To actually heal the gut. So you can take away what's been the constant offenders. But if you're not, if you haven't healed it, you're still going to have the problem.
Right. All right. We've got to take another break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about dietary supplements and where those can be issues. And we may even get into a little bit of the thyroid and talk about that, too. You're listening to Wellness 101.
Is Wellness 101.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Sammy can't drive 55 and we can't fit a show into one-hour segment.
Or two.
Oh.
Just so everybody knows, there have been a few that have been 1 hour long, but there's a lot of information to get out there. So some of the shows take longer.
Yeah.
That's true. That's
great
true.
To listen to when you're exercising, walking, and doing healthy things.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So, all right.
Go get the podcast.
That's right. Get the podcast. Get the podcast. So, we just talked about mistake, no diet changes, and we were talking about how modern conventional doctors oftentimes have zero dietary training. They don't have really any nutrition training, and so then they don't give any nutritional advice.
And they don't think diet has anything to do with fibromyalgia.
Right.
They don't, I mean, it's kind of the, like we had talked about earlier, or I guess last show, that about autoimmunity, how they don't even realize there's any sort of connection with fibromyalgia. And it's kind of the same thing with nutrition. They don't see it as, you know, connected. So there are no recommendations.
Right. Exactly. So, yeah, it is what it is. There's more and better out there. Okay. So moving on, taking too many supplements. So this is kind of a big deal.
And probably kind of surprising to people who know TJ at all, because he is, I mean, we're such a big, you know, we're always saying people aren't getting enough nutrition. They, you know, I mean, supplements are so important. So to be, you know, hammering on taking too many supplements is kind of a change.
Yeah. Well, it happens when I've had patients in the past that literally are taking 40 and 50 different supplements a day. I'm all for supplements. I'm all about it. I'm a big proponent. But that's a bit excessive. I had one lady, I mean, this was very early on in doing this work. Bless her heart. This is a little off the rails from fibromyalgia, but she always comes to mind. She was taking, I don't know how many supplements. I just asked her to come in and bring me the bottles, and I was flabbergasted at how many she brought me, and she was taking all of these different support this, support that, support something else. She was taking like seven different things to support her liver, and I'm like, okay, so I mean what she had, I'm like, this is a toxicity, this is overload. And just in talking to her, I'm like, okay, I'm new at this, but something is off. And so I just went through and I just calculated up her vitamin A load. Now, vitamin A is extremely important. We need quite a bit of it a day, a lot more than the recommended dose. But it, in too high a doses, it becomes toxic. She was taking over 600,000 units of vitamin A a day throughout all of these various blends that she had. She didn't think anything about it because they were all...
I think you're forgetting that none of us other than you know that why that's a lot. Yeah, like, what's normal?
A pregnant woman, a woman who's pregnant can't take more than 5,000 units of vitamin A a day because you risk fetal toxicity.
Oh, okay.
And she was taking like over 500,000 units a day. I mean, this is a big number. Now, a non pregnant woman or a male, they can take more vitamin A than that, but not a lot more.
Not 600,000.
Not 600,000 units. I mean, it was just insane. And so, when I talked to her about that, and she was just flabbergasted that she could possibly be taking too much of something because all of those things were so good. And this is not uncommon. People coming in taking super high doses of this, that, or the other, and they don't really know what it is. They don't know what they're doing. They don't realize that, you know, there are problems that go along with that.
Right. A lot of times this happens when, I mean, if people are using, you know, blends or some, you know, when they're combined into, you know, different vitamins, they don't realize that, you know, a certain vitamin can be added to a number of different supplements.
Right.
Another issue that comes up with this, though, is a lot of the over-counter supplements have different fillers and things in them. I know personally, I was reacting to a lot of, I mean, I have to be really careful, I mean, with supplements. They have to be extremely pure. There cannot be fillers in them. And a lot of people with fibromyalgia, they become overly, you know, excessively
sensitive,
yeah, to different, you know, things, and fillers can be one of them. So, I mean, if you're taking supplements, it's not only the amount, but it's all of those other things that could be in there that could be causing your body problems.
That's true. So you got to be really careful when you're taking supplements, where you get them, what they are, dosages and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So just keep that in mind.
And we can certainly help with that if you've got questions. I know a lot of you have emailed, but, you know, I mean, we're very particular about, because I am so sensitive, we've had to become, you know, very knowledgeable about, the supplements and what's in them.
Right. Last mistake, we'll talk about this one, then we'll wrap it up for the day, and the rest of it we'll just have to cover next week.
Yeah, this is number 8. We'll still have 9 and 10 for next week.
And then we've got all kinds of stuff too.
About you can actually do.
Right. So number 8 is, what, you know, thyroid. What about the thyroid? Well, the thyroid disease or thyroid disease and the thyroid itself is many, many times overlooked in fibromyalgia, and it really needs to be investigated. We've said earlier that you've got to look at all the parts of the thyroid. You know, just a TSH is not going to be enough. That's oftentimes what people run. That's one piece of the 10 that needs to be investigated. You got to look at all 10. It's really what it boils down to. I mean, we can talk a little bit more and come back to this, and we'll start with this next week when we talk on our show. But the thyroid, I mean, every cell in your body is acted upon by thyroid hormone. And so if it's not working correctly, everything in the entire body is going to be off. So this is a big thing with fibromyalgia. It's a metabolic problem. When you have a metabolic problem, you have more than just one simple thing going on. There's a lot of processes and things that are happening in the body.
Right. And a lot of times thyroid problems and fibromyalgia are linked, which makes sense because right. fibromyalgia is generally women and is generally ages 20 to 50. And that's where we see a lot of thyroid problems as
right.
well.
Especially when you start talking about Hashimoto's thyroiditis or autoimmune thyroid.
Yes.
Very, very, very common that people with fibromyalgia have this going on as well. We see it a lot. I see a very high correlation in my clinic. So anyway, well, that's about all the time that we have for today. So I just want to encourage everyone, if you have questions, go to our website, shoot us an email, call us, ask questions. We're more than happy to answer questions out there. Write to us on Facebook. We'll try to get to you. If you have a topic that you would like to hear, by all means, let us know that as well. Our website, theinstituteofnaturalhealth.com. You can call us. Our phone number is 314-293-8123. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram. Check out all of our social media. We try to get as much information out there. The show is podcast on iTunes. It's also on SoundCloud for those of you who are looking for more information or want to catch some of our older shows. Until next week, I'm Dr. TJ. And for Aaron, this has been Wellness 101. Thanks for listening.